Hello everyone, welcome to the Reading of the Fort Dodge Messenger for Monday, May 10th. I'm Kevin Rogers at the microphone. Glad to have you listening as always. We had about an inch of rain in our rain gauge over the weekend, so that's very helpful to the flowers and the grass, and especially to the farmers. And we'll take a more detailed look at our forecast as we conclude our time together. Quite a bit to get to today, so let's go ahead and get looking at the articles from the front page of the Messenger. Small Things in Great Ways is the title of the first article. The ringtone that sounds from Nancy Gabriel's smartphone is Everything's Gonna Be All Right by Bob Marley. It seems fitting for the St. Edmund High School teacher who has helped many of her students through difficult moments in their young lives. Most recently, a student in her Gale Pride or homeroom was brought to tears after she and her mother were harassed at a local store because of their race. She told me what happened, the whole story, said Gabriel, who has taught in Fort Dodge for 48 years. It broke my heart to see her. To see anybody treated that way is sickening. She got these tears in her eyes. They weren't falling. They were just there, ready to go. Lillian Shen, 15 years old, a sophomore, is the student who confided in Gabriel. Shen and her mother were subjected to racist comments a few weeks ago during a visit to Target to pick up a prescription. Shen shared that a small group of middle school-aged children yelled, "Ooh, Asians, you guys are why COVID started. Go back to your country." Upon hearing that, Gabriel asked Shen if she wanted a hug. She said, "Yeah, she just clung to me. So I just hung on as long as she wanted. It used to be a big thing a few years ago that you shouldn't hug a kid. I don't care if I get in trouble for hugging a kid, so be it." Shen said she felt relief. "I cried for a bit in her arms and just felt relieved that someone helped me," Shen said. Shen felt better after talking with Gabriel and thought that was the end of it. But Gabriel went one step further by contacting Target and the local schools to identify the children who made. "I thought we should find out who they were and teach the kids, not just let it go," Gabriel said. She's not sure if the children were ever identified, but thought it was important to make an effort. "I think we need to teach more in school about tolerance, really work on those kinds of things," Gabriel said. Gabriel teaches American literature and film study to grades 10 through 12. Her actions meant a lot to Shen. Shen described Gabriel as sincere. "She's just a rare, really caring teacher," Shen said. "I haven't seen teachers that care as much for her students as she does. She feels more like family rather than a teacher. You can talk to her about anything and she will give you an answer and share her wisdom." Gabriel said a lot of caring teachers within the community would have acted exactly as she did. "Most teachers would have done the same thing. The only difference is I got caught," Gabriel said. Gabriel, who grew up in Minneapolis, liked playing school as a child, and as she got older, becoming a teacher felt like the right path for her. She studied journalism and education at Mankato State in Mankato, Minnesota. But when tragedy struck during college years, she wasn't sure she wanted to pursue teaching anymore. "I almost didn't become a teacher because when I was student teaching in a high school, one of my students killed himself. I still feel so bad about it," Gabriel said. "Nobody saw it coming. He was a good student and athlete, and I just thought I can't be a teacher and go through this." But ultimately, Gabriel realized she was best suited as an educator. And the tragic experience continues to motivate her. "I've learned so much through that experience losing that child that I never want to lose a kid again and be there for them. And when something is wrong, do something," Gabriel said. "That's my tribute to him, is that I try to be aware of what's going on with kids, make them feel valued. I think they need to feel valued and feel heard and realize that they are important." She takes a genuine interest in her students. "I try to get to know each kid a little bit at the beginning of the year," Gabriel said. "I take notes on different things they are interested in. I keep a notebook with things about them. The first few weeks of school, I make a point to just say, 'I saw you were playing softball. What position do you play?' so we can relate as human beings. It used to be in education, you were a sage on the stage, and now you are a guide on the side." She can be firm with students, but fair. She doesn't believe in embarrassing a student in front of their peers. "I have to be different, professional, and firm, but I have to let them see I am a caring person as well. When you do come down on them, you have to let them know you respect them. and validate who they are. Never embarrass them. Keep a sense of humor. Every day has to be a new day. Gabriel moved to Iowa because a friend of hers found a teaching job in the area. I got here and enjoyed and ended up staying here. I didn't ever plan to. It just kind of happened, she said. Gabriel began her teaching career in Fort Dodge in 1974 at South Junior High. Next, she taught at Phillips Middle School. She retired from public schools in 2010, but she quickly found that retirement wasn't for her. Retirement isn't all it's cracked up to be after all these years of waiting for it, Gabriel said. I tried volunteering at the Blandon, the animal shelter, the library, but just didn't get the satisfaction I did from teaching. So she began teaching at St. Edmund in the fall of 2010. She took 2017 and 2018 off for health reasons before returning to teaching again in 2019. One of the joys in being a teacher is seeing former students later in life. This one student remembered reading Of Mice and Men by John Steinbeck in my class, and he actually had the book in his car. He said, I love this book. It's those things that come out years later. Maybe I did have an influence. That was a neat experience. She tries to make her lessons relevant to students. Kids nowadays are so in the now, what's happening right now, Gabriel said, to make sure what you're teaching them relevant. It's not so bad in English because we talk about universal themes. Of Mice and Men, for example, the theme is to have a dream and to try and achieve your dream. Don't give up. Is that something that relates to your life? Yeah. What about your grandparents? Yeah. That's what brings people together, are these universal themes. One assignment Gabriel asks of her students doesn't involve books or exams, though. She asks them to demonstrate kindness in some way, but the catch is that they aren't allowed to tell anyone. Go out and do something kind for somebody. That's your assignment. You can't tell anybody about it. That wrecks it. If you go out and do something nice for someone, you will have the reward in your heart. The ultimate reward for Gabriel is knowing that she's had a positive impact on her students, knowing that possibly I am making a difference in the world somehow, she said. We can't all do great things. We can do small things in great ways. If I can make a difference in just one person's life, I'll consider myself successful. Just do my part to make it a little better than what it would be if I hadn't interacted with these kids. They might be a good human being because of something we said or talked about. We'll head back to the main page of the Messenger and we'll get our next article. Great Scots is the title of the next article. It all started so simply when Stephanie Wisdom saw a photo online of a person holding a Scottish Highland calf. She showed the picture to her boyfriend, Jonathan Wetter. That calf was so cute, Wisdom said. It was easy to see why that photo went viral. Before long, Wisdom and Wetter began purchasing their own Scottish Highland cattle. They had plenty of room for the heritage breed since they'd bought an acreage in October 2020 with 20-plus acres of land south of Lake City, northwest of a historic Rainbow Bridge. They found their first Scottish Highland cow through Craigslist, a website of classified advertisements. We didn't have far to go, said Wetter, a Rockwell City native who purchased the cow from Clint Deerdorf, owner of Deerdorf Highland Cattle at Yale, Iowa. Within a matter of months, Wetter and Wisdom had more than 20 Scottish Highland cattle, which are distinguished by their rugged good looks. Their thick, shaggy hair lends an exotic and almost prehistoric look to them. Even people who can't remember a Holstein from a Hereford said, oh, those are the shaggy ones with the big horns, right? When they referred to Scottish Highland cattle. Drivers passing by Rainbow Raccoon Ranch can't resist slowing down to look at those photogenic bovines with their just jumped out of bed hairstyles. It's a plus that Scottish Highland cattle are docile. They can be affectionate and like to be around people, said Wisdom, who is working with Wetter to develop agritourism opportunities on their acreage near the Raccoon River. The couple is remodeling a 100-year-old cabin and plan to list it on the Airbnb lodging website. They've also registered on HipCamp, an online marketplace that offers outdoor stays and camping experiences. Rainbow Raccoon Ranch has the added allure of history thanks to its location near the former Rainbow Resort, which included a baseball diamond, horse racing, and auto racing track, dance pavilion, air dome, outdoor theater, more and more a century ago. "We're a hobby business," said Wisdom, a Missouri native and director of animal welfare for the National Pork Board. "We want to put our twist on agritourism and share these stories connected to agriculture, wildlife, nature, and history." Fun facts about Scottish Highland cattle. Raising Scottish Highland cattle has been a learning experience for the couple. While both are knowledgeable about pork production, Wetter manages two wean-to-finish swine barns. They've enjoyed getting to know more about these beautiful bovines. An ancient breed, Scottish Highland cattle have withstood the test of time. They're also one of the oldest registered breeds of cattle dating back to the 1880s. One of the Scottish Highland cattle's most distinctive characteristics is their impressive set of horns. While not as long as those of Texas Longhorns, Scottish Highland cattle's horns can reach up to 3 or 4 feet long from tip to tip. Both the bulls and cows have horns. Scottish Highland cattle have a long history of living in close contact with humans. These animals tend to be docile and calm, do not stress easily, and are easy to work with despite their long horns. "We've fallen in love with the breed and enjoy the cattle's personalities," Wisdom said. Scottish Highland cattle are a hardy breed that originated in the mountainous, cold, windy, wet region of Scotland known as the Highlands. The cattle's distinctive long hair keeps them warm in winter and protects their eyes from flies. The fur gives Scottish Highland cattle their distinctive wavy appearance. Scottish Highland cattle's coats come in a variety of colors, including red, black, yellow, white, brindle, silver, and dun. Dun results from a genetic link that dilutes red and black coats and can result in a variation of colors. This medium-sized cattle breed is versatile enough to find a use on just about any farm. Highland cows average 900 to 1,200 pounds when mature. Bulls average 1,500 to 2,000 pounds, depending upon forage conditions. "We've had a 1,700-pound bull," Wetter said. Scottish Highland cattle require little in the way of shelter, food supplements, or expensive grains to achieve and maintain good condition. Wetter and Wisdom's cattle eat grass and hay. Highland cattle are browsers that are capable of supplementing a traditional pasture and forage diet with other edible plants. They've even been used to help clear property of dense brush. Scottish Highland cattle are slow growers. It takes about 24 to 30 months to get them to market weight, which is 1,000 to 1,200 pounds, Wetter said. Scottish Highland cattle are raised primarily for their meat, which is lower in cholesterol than other types of beef. Studies by the Scottish Agricultural College have determined that Highland beef is significantly lower in fat and cholesterol and higher in protein and iron compared to other beef brands. Highland cattle are about 38% leaner than a typical Angus, Wetter added. A group of Scottish Highland cattle is called a fold rather than a herd. The British royal family maintains a fold of Scottish Highland cattle at Balmoral Castle and considers them their beef animal of choice. Besides their natural hardiness, Scottish Highland cattle are a long-lived breed, staying productive later in life. Mother Scottish Highlands are known for often breeding beyond the ages of 18 to 20 and raising 15 to 18 calves in their lifetime, said Wisdom, who frequently posts pictures and videos of the cattle to Rainbow Raccoon Ranch on social media, including the farm's Facebook page. Scottish Highland cattle have caught the attention of the Livestock Conservancy, an organization devoted to protecting endangered livestock breeds from extinction. The good news, when the Livestock Conservancy released its 2019 conservation priority list, it announced that Highland cattle had officially graduated off this list. While the breed has always had a small but loyal following, it's only recently that Scottish Highlands have started achieving their greatest popularity. "Social media has been a huge plus for the breed," said Wisdom, a member of the Heartland Highland Cattle Association. "People think Highlands are cute, and this sparks more interest in the breed." Wisdom and Wetter enjoy helping people learn about Scottish Highland cattle. The couple is hosting an informal, quote, Lazy Sunday with the Cows on May 16th from noon to 6 p.m. at their acreage on Harris Avenue. The public is invited to meet the cows, enjoy outdoor games, kayak or fish on the Raccoon River, bringing your own equipment. Visit nearby Rainbow Bridge and Rainbow Bend Park and enjoy a bonfire that's ready for hot dogs and s'mores. The Feed Shack by Harley Ball and Feed Shed Catering will also be on site to sell food. Find more on the Rainbow Raccoon Ranch Facebook page. We look forward to sharing these experiences with people of all ages who want to learn more about agriculture, livestock production, ecology, and local history, said Wisdom. And I've got a couple of pictures with this article showing the cattle, and they are the very attractive animals for cattle. Fort Dodge man has been arrested for attempted murder. That will be the next article in today's newspaper. Fort Dodge man was arrested over the weekend on charges of attempted murder after police say he intentionally hit a pedestrian with his vehicle on Saturday night. According to a release from the Fort Dodge Police Department, Fort Dodge resident Edward E. Brown, age 52, is charged with attempted murder, a Class B felony, willful injury causing serious injury, Class C felony, and assault with a dangerous weapon, an aggravated misdemeanor. The Webster County Telecommunications Center received a call approximately 5:15 p.m. on Saturday indicating that a pedestrian had been hit by a vehicle in the 10 block of North 10th Street. When officers and medics arrived, they located 57-year-old James Altman of Fort Dodge laying on the sidewalk with, quote, significant injuries. Altman was transported to Unity Point Health Trinity Regional Medical Center by ambulance before being transferred to a Des Moines Medical Center for further treatment. According to witnesses, a white Jaguar car was traveling northbound on North 10th Street, and shortly behind, Altman was traveling northbound on foot. At some point, the Jaguar, allegedly driven by Brown, turned around to head southbound at a high rate of speed and drove onto the sidewalk to hit Altman. Brown was still on the scene when officers arrived. The Fort Dodge Police Department is continuing to investigate this incident. They were assisted by the Fort Dodge Fire Department and the Iowa State Patrol. A high-speed chase ended in Fort Dodge in an accident, or a wreck, rather, that occurred on Sunday. That will be the next article in today's Messenger. There's a picture of Fort Dodge Fire Rescue loading a patient into a fire department ambulance. The driver of a vehicle involved in a multi-county high-speed chase on Sunday afternoon was transported to Unity Point Health Trinity Regional Medical Center by ambulance after the chase ended on Kenyon Road, just west of U.S. Highway 169. The driver's name and extent of injuries were not released by law enforcement on Sunday. From the article, a high-speed pursuit that crossed several central Iowa counties ended in a crash in Fort Dodge on Sunday afternoon. The pursuit, with speeds reported as high as 112 miles per hour, appears to have started in Carroll County and moved into Calhoun County. Shortly before 3:30 p.m., it was reported to be near Lake City in Calhoun County and moving eastbound on Iowa Highway 175. The chase made its way north on Highway 4 before going east on U.S. Highway 20. The pursuit crossed into Webster County at approximately 3:45 and ended with a crash minutes later on Kenyon Road just west of U.S. Highway 169 near the America Inn Hotel. The driver of the vehicle was taken to Unity Point Health Trinity Regional Medical Center by ambulance. Life Flight was called to the hospital on standby. The driver's name and the extent of the driver's injuries were not released by law enforcement on Sunday. The Fort Dodge Police Department, Webster County Sheriff's Office, Fort Dodge Fire Department, and Iowa State Patrol were on scene at the end of the pursuit. Iowa State Patrol Sergeant Nick Albrecht said the Iowa State Patrol will be taking over the investigation. No other information was available by press time on Sunday, but the messenger will update new information as it comes in. Another accident occurred in Fort Dodge. There's a picture in the newspaper of two very messed up cars. One is the back end of a car and the other one's the front end of another car. Two people were injured after a parked car on Carl King Bridge was struck by another vehicle on Friday night. The crash was reported at 9:15 p.m. According to the Fort Dodge Police Department, Christian Lundberg, 20, of Lehigh, was driving westbound in a Mercury Milano when he struck the parked car in Acura MDX. The parked vehicle had a blown-out tire. Eric Eckerman, 31, of Fort Dodge, was outside of the vehicle changing the tire. Madeline Cathcart, 22, of Fort Dodge, was in the passenger seat of the vehicle when struck. Lundberg said he didn't see hazard lights on the parked SUV. He saw tail lights and thought the vehicle was in motion, according to police. Cathcart complained of head pain and was transported to Unity Point Health Trinity Regional Medical Center by private vehicle. Eckerman sustained a minor burn mark on his right leg from where the vehicle hit it. He also went to the hospital for treatment. Both vehicles were totaled. The Fort Dodge Police Department and Fort Dodge Fire Department responded. Head back to the main page of the Messenger, and we'll click where it says more local news, and we'll see if there's anything there to read. A fire has destroyed an RV at the Arbor Pro shop on Sunday in Fort Dodge. That will be our next article. There's a picture of firefighters in the Badger Fire Department working to extinguish an RV that was on Arbor Pro complex on Sunday afternoon. A Sunday afternoon fire tore through an RV being stored in the yard of Arbor Pro, located near the intersection of Nelson Avenue and 170th Street in Fort Dodge. The Fort Dodge Fire Department and the Badger Fire Department were called to the fire around 5:30 p.m. According to the Fort Dodge Police Department, Captain Jeff Hill, the owners of the RV were getting it ready for the season when they noticed smoke in the engine compartment. The fire damage to the RV was extensive, and the vehicle is a total loss. No injuries were reported. We'll head over next to the opinion page and catch us up on what's going on with legislative actions. The Capitol Roundup is the title of today's local column, and this is submitted by Jesse Green. Greetings, friends and neighbors. We are now in overtime. Normally, session would have wrapped up about a week ago. To some, it is surprising we have not. All I can say is that we are at a historical time in Iowa's history. This is the largest Republican trifecta since 1973. I do not say it to gloat, but to shed light on the gravity of this moment. There are many things I've had the pleasure as a Republican to place my yes vote on that many Republicans before me have only dreamed of having the opportunity to do. Even though we have accomplished some unique things this session, there are many wish list items left on the table. I have been consistent ever since the start of the campaign that I will never be a stumbling block for the issues our regional representatives are passionate about. My area representatives and I are all part of a Republican family with a Republican worldview. We all have had unique life experiences and have come from places that have shaped our Republican worldview and our passions. Even though I may not agree 100% on some of my representatives' policies, I trust their policies are what is needed to advance their particular districts and Iowa into a prosperous direction for everyone. Everyone has their visions that drove them to the Golden Dome that they desire to become reality. For some, it is child care legislation, EMS, tax cuts, or education savings accounts, to name a few topics. The question with this logjam situation is how many of these policies will hit the governor's desk. The past couple of weeks, the governor has helped lead the way for the legislature to find agreements. More and more, I have been impressed with her leadership as this session has progressed. For those of us not in leadership, we are on call as particular issues get ironed out as to how their session and budget will finish out. When this is all said and done, I hope that each of us will be able to go home and bring their constituents a piece of their vision that they can be proud of. I hope that 2021 will be a year everyone can look back on and be proud. The bill that was the highlight of this week was the vaccine passport bill. If nothing was done to address the issue of vaccine passports, communities in the state inclined to excessive government involvement could require a vaccine passport to go into a government building. Certain business owners could require vaccine proof to enter their business, or a well-intentioned nonprofit could make it a condition of entry. Never before in America have you had to show proof of vaccination to access routine everyday functions of life. Iowans can be certain that tradition will continue after Governor Reynolds signs House File 889 into law. As always, feel free to reach out with any thoughts and concerns. I am here to be your voice at the Capitol and a source of information for you. Reach out to me at any time at 515-351-9761. Jesse Green is a Republican from Harcourt and serves as a state senator. We'll take a look next at the column entitled What Seniors Are Saying. This is a column in The Messenger where they interview a senior in high school. And I'm sorry, but all it says is that this is a senior from Fort Dodge Senior High. To my knowledge, it doesn't include her name anywhere. But she's asked, what programs and activities do you participate in? She says, I'm involved in cross country, ambassadors, Silver Cord, and National Honor Society. What academic accomplishment are you most proud of? I'm most proud of taking college classes while maintaining my 3.99 grade point average. What's your best piece of advice for younger students? My advice is to find a good balance between extracurricular activities and school. From experience, I know this is important. Don't procrastinate. Have a balance between academics and activities to succeed. What is your go-to song or artist? My favorite artist is Dan plus Shay. What is your favorite class or subject and why? My favorite class would be Iowa Central Human Anatomy and Physiology with Mr. Long. In his class, I found a strong interest in anatomy. Sometimes it was stressful, but I thought the material I was learning was very captivating. From taking this class, I plan to study something in the medical field or science related in college. What is your favorite movie? One of my top favorites is Guardians of the Galaxy. If you could have dinner with someone famous, who would it be and why? Claire Barton, because she founded the American Red Cross and helped many people throughout her life. What are you working hardest on right now? Right now I'm working my hardest on college classes and figuring out my college major. Who is your role model in life? Both of my brothers, Austin and Brady, have always been strong role models. They have shown me how to become a better person and work harder to achieve my goals, even when I want to give up. And what is your favorite memory from your time in Fort Dodge schools? There are so many, but attending events with my friends and cross-country team times were great memories. And that is what seniors are saying. Fort Dodge Senior High senior student who shall remain nameless because they didn't include her name in this particular article. From our files shows a picture of Fort Dodge firefighter Rick Stein carrying Iowa Central Community College nursing student Sherry Hodovec from the quote wreckage of a mock plane crash at the Fort Dodge Regional Airport. She was among 15 passengers and 3 crew members, quote, injured in the drill. The drill is required by the Federal Aviation Administration every 3 years. And that is from our files, May 2006. There is a reminder that Mill Road between 210th Street and Quail Avenue will be closed beginning Monday and remain closed for about a week, according to the Webster County Road Department. The road will be closed so that the Canadian National Railway can rebuild its crossing there. You're listening to the Fort Dodge Messenger on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Information Service for the Blind, and now we will turn to today's obituary page. The first obituary today is for Ethel Howry. From Manson, Memorial Services for Ethel Howry will be 2 p.m. Saturday, May 15th at St. Paul Lutheran Church in Manson. Visitation is from 1 p.m. until service time Saturday at the church. Palmer and Swank Funeral Home in Rockwell City is handling arrangements. From Litton, Stephen D. Krause. Graveside services for Stephen D. Krause will be 11 a.m. Saturday, May 15th at Crown Hill Cemetery at Jolly. Palmer and Swank Funeral Home in Rockwell City is in charge of arrangements. Jane Parks. Jane Parks, 64, of Fort Dodge, died Sunday, May 29th at her home. Services are pending with Loffisweiler's Funeral Home. And that concludes our look at today's Messenger obituary page. Fort Dodge Community School District has named its May Students Employee of the Month. The Fort Dodge Community School District has named its Students and Employee of the Month for May. This program recognizes one elementary, one middle school, and one high school student, as well as one staff member for monthly exceeding expectations. Crew Gale is the Elementary Student of the Month. Julie Springer nominated Gale. She said that although she is not his teacher, she is in his classroom often and always finds Gale involved and on task. He likes to complete the work he is doing before leaving to see the nurse. He often talks about the things he is learning or what he has gone on in class. He works well and gets along with all his team classmates. He truly cares about other students, is kind and respectful to students and staff. He appreciates anything and everything that is done for him and never leaves the office without saying thank you. He is responsible and can be trusted to follow through with what he is taught and what is recommended regarding his health. Crew is responsible and kind, which makes him a great kid for other students to watch and learn from, Springer said. He makes me feel lucky to be his school nurse, and I enjoy him every single day. Gale is the son of John and Laura Gale. Anthony Tercios is the Middle School Student of the Month. Bailey Baker nominated Anthony. She said Anthony has improved exponentially this year. He now follows along in class, has no late assignments, and his grades have improved. He is a good friend to all the students in his class. He helps translate material for his friends who speak Spanish. He is always cracking jokes to keep things lighthearted. She shared that Anthony had a rough start to the year. He has completely turned around in the past few months, and both his attitude and grades reflect this. I am proud of Anthony's efforts and growth this year, Baker said. He works hard and it shows. Anthony is the son of Carlos Tercios and Glenda Mata. Sawyer Springer is the Senior High Student of the Month. Nick Vinson nominated Springer. Vinson said Springer is always striving to better himself, both in the classroom and outside of it. He's making sure grades are high and taking the time to read outside books that he feels will better prepare him for the rest of his life. He does his best and asks questions to make sure he knows what to do and how to do it. Springer always makes time to talk to people. He is kind to all students and works to make everyone feel as though they belong. He is involved in just about anything you can imagine, works hard in classes, talks to and cares about people, and has an inquisitive young mind. I know without a doubt that Sawyer will be successful in whatever he chooses to do because he is driven, persistent, and positive, Vincent said. He embodies everything we say we want out of students and does it with a smile on his face. He is one, if not the best person I know right now. Springer is the son of Julie Springer. Raquel Benegas is the Employee of the Month. Lisa Reisner and Jason Drew nominated Benegas. They said she has encouraged and supported students in the Fort Dodge District for more than 25 years. She builds rapport with students and families to help build student success that students can use in the classroom and beyond. She looks at students' strengths and builds a plan to help support any learning needs and has the students' strengths at the heart of all she does. She said Benegas is patient, warm, and welcoming, always smiling and having fun with the students. She is a great role model for students and staff alike. They said Raquel has a natural enthusiasm that students and adults are drawn to. She is a ray of sunshine that adds to each classroom and continues after she leaves. She is extremely dedicated to the students and is a joy to work with. And that is the Fort Dodge Students of the Month and the Employee of the Month. We'll take a look next at some articles from the Daily Freeman Journal from Webster City. A little thing like a pandemic will not stop the march of history at Northeast Hamilton Elementary School. Students will present their annual Living Wax Museum on Thursday, May 13th from 6 to 7 p.m. at the NEH Walking Track. According to Laura Sicer, 5th and 6th grade reading and social studies teacher for NEH Elementary, the event will be held outside to accommodate social distancing with the school's walking track as the venue for the event. The walking track will not only provide excellent accommodations for social distancing, it will also allow visitors to easily flow through the exhibits while viewing the work of the students as they depict their chosen historical figure, she said. Like so many events during the pandemic, the scheduled date for the Living Wax Museum has been dependent upon favorable weather, explained Sicer. I think the new staging for the event due to COVID will work out fine as long as the wind stays calm, she said. The students have been working since January to research their historical figure. Then they developed a costume timeline, a brief line summary, and a display, explained Sicer. 22 people will be portrayed during the event. I just firmly believe the students deserve an authentic audience to perform live in front of because they have worked so hard on this project, said Sicer. We will do everything we can to make that happen. Historical figures the public can expect to see represented are basketball legend Kobe Bryant, football superstar Tom Brady, martial artist Ronda Rousey and Ryan Doyle, as well as all-around female athlete Babe Didrikson. Also featured will be the 15-year-old Boone County heroine Kate Shelley, who saved the lives of train passengers by traversing a washed-out Honey Creek Bridge in order to alert authorities of the danger to oncoming trains. Illustrators will also make an appearance this year. Cartoonist Charles Schultz of Peanuts fame will be featured, along with Dave Pilkey, who pens the adventures of Captain Underpants and Dogman. Historical and political figures to be featured are Abraham Lincoln, John Lewis, Cesar Chavez, Pocahontas, and explorers Meriwether Lewis and William Clark. Scientists and inventors who changed the course of past and present history will also be recognized. Albert Einstein, Elon Musk, and Steve Jobs. Diarist Anne Frank will also be portrayed. The German-Dutch girl of Jewish heritage became famous only after her death when her diary was published. It detailed her family's hiding from Nazi officials during Adolf Hitler's reign. Fiction writer J.K. Rowling, who introduced the world to Harry Potter and Muggles, will also be portrayed. Entertainment personalities will also be featured. They include Selena Perez, who introduced Tiano music to mass audiences worldwide. Actress Emma Watson and Breakfast at Tiffany's star Audrey Hepburn, who later became the renowned UNICEF Goodwill Ambassador. In the event of unfavorable weather, the event will be moved to the NEH Gymnasium. It is requested that everyone attending please wear a mask. The Webster City School Board will discuss the 21-22 high school schedule Monday night when it meets in regular session. The board will also consider personnel matters, including the resignation of high school principal Dan Johnson. Johnson stepped into the principal's job at the start of the 2019-2020 school year. He replaced Brent Jorth, who moved on to the position of superintendent at Central Lyons School District. In other personnel matters, resignations from Jane Feltis, high school special education teacher, and Tyler Mossback, 7th grade assistant boys basketball coach, are also on the agenda. The board will consider contract recommendations for Lisa Lyons to a 5th grade position at Webster City Middle School, Michael Ross to academic interventionist at Sunset Heights Elementary, and Lisa Gedkin to a 3rd grade position at Northeast Hamilton Elementary. The board is expected to go into closed session at the end of the meeting for the annual evaluation of Superintendent Dr. Mandy Ross. Many of the other items on the agenda pertain to the sale of bonds. The board will consider a bond disclosure policy, a post-issuance compliance policy, a resolution appointing a paying agent, bond register, and transfer agent, as well as approving a resolution authorizing those agreements. A resolution authorizing the term of issuance and providing for and securing payment of the school infrastructure sales, services, and use tax revenue. Bonds will also be reviewed. The bonds are being used to pay for HVAC upgrades at Pleasant View and at Sunset Heights Elementary Schools. The tentative list of 2021 graduates will be considered. Graduation is set for Sunday, May 23rd, 2 o'clock p.m. at the Competition Gym. The board will accept a gift to the district from the class of 1965 to the Needy Family Fund in memory of Danny Riley. Fundraising requests from the Webster City High School Vocal Boosters and the National Honor Society are also on the agenda for Monday. During the meeting, board members will be recognized for their work as part of School Board Member Recognition Month. Members of the public wishing to join the 6 o'clock meeting can do so by logging on to the Zoom conferencing platform. A Webster City High School graduate has been inducted into the Missouri Recreation and Parks Hall of Fame. On April 15th, David Oslin was inducted into the Missouri Recreation and Parks Hall of Fame. The induction took place at the annual awards banquet of the Missouri Park and Recreation Association in Columbia, Missouri. Oslin is a 1966 graduate of Webster City High School. His professional career in parks and recreation began when he served as recreation director for the city of Warrensburg, Missouri from 1974 through 1977. He served as executive director of the Missouri Park and Recreation Association from 1977 through 2008. Ended his professional career as the partnership program manager at Musco Lighting in Oskaloosa from 2008 through 2011. He lobbied the Missouri General Assembly for over a decade to create a stable source of funding for Missouri City and County Parks and Recreation agencies. This resulted in the passage of the Park and Stormwater Sales Tax in 1995. To date, this legislation has generated over $3 billion in new funding for over 210 Missouri communities. Oslin is the 34th member of the Missouri Recreation and Parks Hall of Fame. He has been retired since 2011 and is currently living in Sedona, Arizona. The Missouri Recreation and Parks Hall of Fame award was developed by Missouri Park and Recreation Association in 2009 to honor professionals and special individuals who have made outstanding, unique, lasting, and extraordinary contributions to the recreation and park movement in Missouri. Across Iowa's 99 counties, 324 grants totaling $3,452,729 were awarded to Feeding America partner pantries and feeding sites to mitigate additional costs incurred by frontline food assistance providers that stepped up to respond to unusually high demand during the COVID-19 food insecurity crisis. The grants in Hamilton County totaling $54,169.07 went to organizations including Upper Des Moines Opportunity Food Pantry, St. Paul's Lutheran Church, The Lord's Cupboard, Jewel and All Cultures Equal Incorporated. The funds will help the local pantries purchase and distribute food to the community. Many made possible by the CARES Act funding, these grants were administered by the Iowa Food Bank Association. The organization is made up of the 6 food banks that serve every Iowa county, including Food Bank of Iowa. In 2020, Food Bank of Iowa and food banks in Waterloo, Davenport, Hiawatha, Sioux City, and Omaha together distributed more than 60 million pounds of food to Iowans struggling to make ends meet via close collaboration with 1,200 boots-on-the-ground partners. According to Feeding America, food insecurity exploded due to the economic fallout of the pandemic, initially impacting 1 in 4 Iowans. Officials with the Food Bank of Iowa said even as vaccinations started to slow the spread of COVID-19 across the state, a high level of food insecurity persists as 1 child out of 5 relies on some sort of food assistance. Food Bank of Iowa served an additional 220,000 Iowans, moving 25% more pounds of food in 2020, said Michelle Book, Food Pantry of Iowa Chief Executive Officer. This level of service would not have been possible without dedicated, committed partners who share our ethics, mission, and passion. Registration for youth summer activities will begin at Fuller Hall on Monday, May 10th, according to officials with the Webster City Recreation and Park Grounds, Public Grounds rather. Youth summer activities will get underway the week of June 3rd and 7th. A wide range of activities will be offered, including the following: Pee-wee baseball, which is designed for those finishing kindergarten and first grade. The activity will meet Monday and Wednesday events evenings at Middleton Sports Complex at Nokomis Park. Babe Ruth baseball will meet Tuesday and Thursday evenings at Middleton Sports Complex and is open to those finishing second and third grade. Pee-wee softball is for those kids finishing kindergarten and first grade. The group will meet Sunday, Tuesday, and Thursday at the high school ball field. Dates will revolve around the JV and varsity softball schedule. Babe Ruth softball for those finishing second and third grade will meet Tuesday and Thursday at the high school ball fields. Dates will also revolve around the JV varsity softball schedule. The fees for baseball and softball are $31.50 for Webster City residents and $36 for non-residents. Regarding swim team, for swimmers age 6 through 18 who have completed level 4 or above swim lessons, the team will begin to meet on June 7th with practices on Monday, Tuesday, and Thursday mornings at the outdoor pool from 8:30 to 9:30. Meets will be held on Wednesdays. The cost is $36.50 for residents, $41.75 for non-residents. Youth tennis is for children finishing 2nd through 6th grades. The group will meet Monday through Friday in the morning, July 19th through the 30th. Cost is $31 for Webster City residents, $35 for non-residents. Swim lessons will also be held in two sessions, June 14th through the 25th and July 5th through the 16th. The classes are designed for those age 5 and older, levels 1 through 6. The lessons will be held at the outdoor pool. The cost is $36.50 for Webster City residents and $41.75 for non-residents. Officials also said that season passes for the outdoor pool will be available for purchase starting May 10th. The outdoor pool will open for the season on Saturday, June 5th. Youth passes are $42.50 for residents or $48.75 for non-residents. Adult passes are $50.75 for residents, $58 for non-residents. Family passes are $109.50 for residents and $125.75 for non-residents. Those who have Fuller Hall season passes can purchase the pool passes at half price. For more information, call Fuller Hall at 832-9193. Looking at the Messenger sports section, Iowa Central Tritons football team cannot stop number 2 Snow. For the second consecutive week, second-ranked Snow College showed just how dangerous they can be in a matter of minutes. The Badgers put up a big run on Ellsworth last Saturday to earn a victory and return to Iowa this past weekend to best number 10 Iowa Central 48-18. Tied at 3-all after 30 minutes of play, Snow returned the opening kickoff of the third quarter, scored a defensive touchdown, and turned a close game into an easy victory inside Dodger Stadium. "They bullied us," Iowa Central head coach Jesse Montado said. "We couldn't do anything right there in the second half. We turned the ball over. We failed to convert a couple of key possessions. We were just handled on both sides of the ball." Byron Jarrett led a pair of touchdown drives in the fourth quarter, but the Badgers would answer each time with another score of their own. Jarrett threw for 109 yards and found the end zone on short TD runs. Destin Washington had 101 yards receiving on 3 catches, and Jaden Washington ran for 57 yards for the Tritons, who are 3-3 overall. Deontay Nelson picked off a pass on defense. "We had some chances there in the first half to take advantage, and we didn't convert," Montado said. "Our defense kept us in the game again. We just didn't do enough on offense to help them out. Add in the special teams mistakes and turnovers, and you can't beat a team like Snow doing all of that." Snow, who started the year with a 31-30 victory over Iowa Western and Council Bluff, was led by the duo of Mekki Kimball and Seth Kalin, as they ran for over 150 yards, Garrison Beach threw for 132 yards, and the Badger defense earned 7 sacks, forcing 3 turnovers. The Tritons return to action on Saturday when they host Ellsworth. The Iowa Central baseball team showed Eric Stein exactly what they can do on Sunday at Ed Barber Field, facing rival North Iowa area in a best-of-3 series. The Tritons scored a sweep, advancing to the next round of the Region 11 tournament. with wins of by scores of 6-4 and 9-0. Iowa Central joins Kirkwood and Northeast in the double elimination tourney, which will take place beginning Friday at Mount Mercy in Cedar Rapids. Des Moines area holds a 1-0 lead over Southeastern in the fourth and final series. "We're in it, and that's all we need to win it," said Stein. "You give yourself a chance to advance when you play baseball like that." Strong pitching efforts from John Klein, Devon Shway, Matthew Wilkinson, and Kai Riem silenced the Trojan bats, and the defense played nearly perfect baseball. "We've got a handful of guys that can really get the job done on the mound." Klein was typical Klein. Shway looked really sharp. Wilkinson came out of the bullpen and shut them down. Kai has been just great all year. Klein struck out 6 over 7 innings, scattering 6 hits with just one earned run. Wilkinson recorded the final 6 outs, with 4 of them coming by strikeout. He did not allow a hit or walk a batter. Shway pitched 5 innings, striking out 7 with just 2 hits allowed and no walks. Riem tossed the final 2 frames, striking out 1 with a walk and a hit. At the plate, Jack Sievers had the key hit in the opener, belting a 3-run homer to give Iowa Central an early 6-1 lead. Brock Johnson drove in 2 runs and had a stolen base, while Derek Kay had 2 hits and a steal. "We just got good production up and down the lineup," Stein said. "Guys were patient and waiting for their pitch. It's a lot of fun when you are playing baseball like that." The Triton softball team season came to an end. The Iowa Central softball team saw their season come to an end on Sunday in the Region 11B tournament. The Tritons dropped a 12-4 decision to Kirkwood, which pushed them into an elimination game with Ellsworth, which the Panthers won 4-1. Ellsworth will need to defeat Kirkwood twice on Monday to advance to districts. Logan Schnitzer added to her single-season home run record with a blast against the Eagles, driving in 2 and reaching on a walk. Abby Wilson had 2 hits, and Rachel Newell drove in a run as Madison Huseman struck out 6 batters. Maddie Lang added a hit and scored a run. Wilson had 2 hits and scored versus Ellsworth. Schnitzer drew 2 walks and had a hit. Rachel Newell, Carly Thompson, and Abby Thilgis all stole a base. Kenzie Rosenboom drove in a run, with Kayla Wookie recording 3 strikeouts. "We never quit, just like all season," said head coach Bo Jabin. "These girls were dealt a lot of adversity, but they continued to practice, get better, and be excellent student athletes. We are sending off a great group of sophomores who stuck with us and helped set the tone for the next group." In the Region 11A tournament, Des Moines area advanced and will host a district series. We'll take a look next at events that took place on this day in history. On this date, May 10th in 1869, the Transcontinental Railroad was completed, unifying the United States. On this date in 1871, the Treaty of Frankfurt am Main ends the Franco-Prussian War. In 1994, Nelson Mandela, South Africa's first black president, is inaugurated. In 1775, the Second Continental Congress assembles as Americans capture Fort Ticonderoga. In 1990, China released 211 prisoners arrested during the Tiananmen Square protests. On this date in 1863, Confederate General Thomas J. Stonewall Jackson dies. On this date in 1865, Confederate President Jefferson Davis was captured by Union forces. On this date in 1924, J. Edgar Hoover began his 48-year tenure as the director of the FBI. On this date in 1996, 8 climbers died on Mount Everest. On this date in 1940, Winston Churchill became Prime Minister of Britain. On this date in 1980, the United States government gave Chrysler a $1.5 billion loan. And on this date in 1877, Rutherford B. Hayes has the first phone installed in the White House. Taking a look next at our weather forecast for the coming week or so. Enjoying a beautiful sunny day in Fort Dodge on Monday. Although the weather forecast says it's supposed to be mostly cloudy, I'm looking outdoors and it's just gorgeous. However, Tuesday mostly clear, high of 63, a low Tuesday night of 39. High Wednesday, 65, under partly cloudy skies. The low Wednesday night, 41. Thursday, partly cloudy, 67 degrees for a high, 46 for a low. Friday, high of 66 with a chance of rain showers. 40% chance of rain showers. Rain shower chances continue Friday night, a low of 48 degrees. Mostly cloudy Saturday, a high of 70. A chance of rain showers Saturday night with a low of 53. Rain chances continue on Sunday with a 50% chance of rain showers and a high of 73 degrees. That's going to bring us to the end of the reading of the Fort Dodge Messenger with a little help from the Webster City Daily Freeman Journal. I'm Kevin Rogers at the microphone. Thank you so much for joining me for this time together. Of course, reminding you that these podcasts are available to you. Many podcasts are available to you at iowaradioreading.org. And we appreciate your continued support of IRIS, the Iowa Radio Information Service to the Blind. Stay safe, stay healthy, take good care of yourselves, and we'll talk to you again real soon here on IRIS. Bye-bye for now.